And now it's time for the Wildside News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Change. All of everything is changing. We hear about it every day in the news, and we have to wonder, is change accelerating, or are we just hearing a lot more, a lot faster? We look to the future, and it seems we're heading full sail into the uncharted seas. We're not in Kansas anymore, folks. The future is upon us, and today, we look at the changes and what they mean. So get ready. Here comes the future, when we return here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Welcome to another Wildside News. I am your host, Sydney Wildsmith. You know, does it feel as if changes to this world are happening faster all of a sudden? Well, today, you are about to take a journey around the world as we look at the changing pace of change. We have a great show today. In a moment, we're going to hear from the man who makes sandals. And in the second segment, we take a look at a fascinating science, the science of animal behavior, and the ways in which ethologists, like our guest, Dr. Ethan Klotfelter, are interpreting dramatic changes in animal behavior around the world. Hyperactive fish, stupid frogs, fearless mice, and seagulls that just fall over. What's behind this? We take an in-depth look to find out. And in our third segment, we'll talk with Greg Dudgeon from Sitka, Alaska, and the amazing ties of the ancient peoples through time, and the standard they are about to set in moving boldly into the future. Yes, it's a story from our park of the week. So, we'd best keep moving on. And a program note, I was looking forward to having a legend of planetary change, Dave Foreman, on our show today, but the long years of service have forced Dave to confront some painful health issues, and so I'm sorry to say Dave cannot be with us today. His new book, Rewilding North America, put out by the great people at Island Press, will be featured in an upcoming show. So if you know Dave, send him some light. He's fine, just aching more than he wants to. So now let's take a look at the news. Today, this is a sad story, perhaps one of the saddest I've heard in a while. Every once in a while, these things come across, and I just simply have to focus on them, lest anyone should doubt the existence of global warming. Please stay tuned. As a naturalist, there are many stories from the animal world that amaze me. The circumpolar flight of the Arctic tern, the grand migrations of the monarch butterflies, the elaborate mating rituals of the bowerbirds, and right up there are the adaptations that animals have evolved to survive. From the time I was young, the stories of the Arctic always had special power. The incredible challenges of survival during the long frigid winters, the adaptations that the animals made to accommodate to the endless white world. I've always stood in awe at the power of nature to develop dramatic, bold systems for survival. Certainly in the Arctic, the change from summer coats to winter coats was most amazing. The white of the polar bear provided a natural cover while hunting. The Arctic fox, too, put on an exquisite white fur. And so, too, did the Arctic hare. Then in the spring, the white was shed for the summer coat of browns to blend into the spring and summer landscapes. Here comes the future. And it's being revealed through mysterious changes to the ancient cycles. In the Arctic, as spring is suddenly appearing much earlier, as the snow melts and the earth returns earlier than before, it is suddenly out of sync with the white-furred beings, who now appear stark against the darkening landscape too soon. The polar bear stands out and can be easily seen by its prey. The Arctic hare becomes a tempting beacon for predators of all kinds, and the Arctic fox is out of sync as well. These are significant changes, more because they tell us just how suddenly and dramatically humans are changing systems that took millennia to put in place, and that we considered part of the wondrous miracle of the living world. The poor Arctic creatures, I wonder what they must think. Contrary to what so many believe, I believe the wild beings have a great sense of self and awareness of their place in their own ways. Will the wild creatures adapt to these sudden changes? The truth is, we just don't know. And the larger question remains, can we adapt to these sudden changes? In the weeks ahead, I will be talking with Native peoples whose ancient ways of survival are under attack from the changes that we speculate about. Through the months and years ahead, the Wildside News will continue to bring you the important news that gives us indicators of things to come. Here comes the future, and it's closer than you may think. And that's the news. Next week, we're going to have a great guest, Tom Mangelson, a phenomenal wildlife photographer. And we're also going to be looking at Lighthawk, the pilots who dedicate and donate their time to fly around the world and give people an aerial perspective of some of the changes that we keep talking about and noticing on the planet. And then on September 30th, we're going to have a very special show in which we focus on the state of the oceans. Boy, we hear a lot about the changing nature of this planet, and certainly there's two areas that seem to really indicate these changes dramatically. One are the Arctic zones. The prospect of global warming is showing itself in those areas, and then as well in the oceans. And certainly some people are speculating that some of the amazing storms that we're having these days may come from a warming of the ocean. So we've got a lot of great shows coming up in the future. This is your mainstream alternative. The Wildside News offers an opportunity for you to get real information and to keep abreast of the stories that so often don't really make the mainstream media, what we call the mainstream media. So, but most of us actually care about nature. We love the earth. We're excited about a positive future, and that's what we want, but we have such a hard time hearing about that. Well, here is where you can come on a regular basis to get a mainstream alternative. Well, let's take a look at our first feature today. We all have our favorite gear. It can be as simple as a crumpled rain hat or a compass that just keeps working. It can be a field guide or a brand new ultralight tent. There's so much to choose from these days. But carrying it all is the footwear. And as we look around these days, we see lots of people wearing sandals in just about any occasion. Chaco, that is Chaco, is a maker of some of the trade's finest outdoor sandals. And I want to share an interview I had with Chaco's founder, the man who makes sandals. I'm talking with Mark Pagan, who is the president and founder of Chaco, and you're out of Paonia, Colorado. And I have a personal affection for Chaco because I think they're great people who actually have a passion for doing the right thing on the planet. Mark, I'm just curious, why sandals? How did this begin?
It began with a background in custom shoemaking, followed by a stint as a river guide. And after squishing around in wet tennis sneakers for a year with prune-like feet and seeing some of the early sports sandals, that had the marriage of an open-toe shoe with synthetic materials that were water-friendly, I thought I had a better idea.
Okay, so you take an idea, but how in the world do you take that and then turn it into something in reality?
Oh, you make a lot of mistakes first. You really do. I understood construction, shoe construction, and materials. I understood the performance aspects that I was seeking in the shoes. I had no idea of manufacturing techniques, how to build a company, personnel, accounting, sales and marketing, no clue at all. And it was really the school of hard knocks to put it all together.
So when did this all begin?
This all began 1989 on April Fool's Day, when I decided that I would quit my guiding job as a river guide and devote myself full-time to building what I considered to be the ultimate sports sandal.
And you've come a long way.
Yeah, it's a little bit different now, 15 years later. The company is about 100 employees, and we have a decent reputation for building quality goods.
Let's talk about your sandals. What do you like to stress in terms of the Chaco design?
The most unique thing about the Chaco design is the contour of the footbed. And we spent a lot of time working on this. It's a very precise contour, and there are all kinds of biomechanical terms that describe it, but really what it gives is a lot of comfort. You'll see a lot of people walking around, even at the trade show, in their Chaco sandals, because it's a contour that gives all-day comfort. Many miles later, your feet still feel good.
Now, is there some sort of special fitting process that you go through? Are there special shapes and forms for that foot, or is it a basic size?
Well, with sandals, there's a fair amount of leeway. It's not like a closed shoe. The straps are pretty accommodating. We make the sandals in whole sizes. If you're between sizes, I would really urge you to try on, you know, the two sizes that you're considering. And it would really be, how does the arch support feel on each one of those sizes? That would really be the determining factor.
I know that with a lot of sandals, actually, there's a lot of foot fatigue because you're trying to keep the sandal on. And I hate that. I'm just curious how you address that.
Well, we have a number of different strap configurations, but the most popular and the one that really brought us on the map is called the Z1 and Z2. And the straps are designed to really ride on the key points of your foot so that the bone structure of your foot helps hold the sandal on. You don't have to grip them with your toes. They stay on very well.
Now, can you drag one of these sandals out here? I'd like to see one.
This is a Z2 sandal. It features a polyurethane footbed and a Vibram rubber outsole. And the strap pulls through the footbed in one continuous loop so that it's infinitely adjustable. And there's a single buckle closure, so we've avoided the use of any Velcro on the sandal.
From my perspective, it means that in the process of pulling on one cord and by kind of adjusting this to your foot, you end up with almost a perfect fit with a single adjustment.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Also, with the Vibram sole, I noticed that it isn't as heavy as some sandals would be.
Yeah, we've tried to keep the weight down, but durability is a very important thing for us, and so we've chosen to use polyurethane as a footbed as opposed to an EVA, which breaks down more quickly. One thing I might add is all of our sandals, in fact, all of the footwear that we produce, is resoleable. And we feel really strongly that products should be able to be repaired and not tossed in the landfill.
That's a good point. And a lot of the regular shoe manufacturers and repair people can do that, or do you advise people to send them back to your company?
We like to do it ourselves. That way we can guarantee that the bonds are good and the new sole that we apply will stay on, you know, equally as long as the original sole.
So now, how long do you expect one of these uppers to last then?
Well, I wish I could give some number of years, but it's completely variable. We see some people who can wear sandals for years and years, and they look brand new. We have a guy who does some testing for us, and he's a Grand Canyon River Ranger. And he's a big guy, and he's on his feet on rough rock all the time, and he can probably wear out sandals faster than anyone else I've met.
There's also lots of different applications for sandals. Why don't you talk about some of those?
Well, originally the sandals were designed for outdoor professionals. You know, we gained our reputation with river guides, outdoor educators, wilderness instructors, and when the word got out and they started wearing the sandals, then their clients looked at their feet and said, "What are you wearing? Maybe I should be wearing the same." And while they were originally designed for these, you know, outdoor professionals, everyone is wearing them now, and you see people in the mall strolling around in their Chaco sandals. It doesn't mean that they're any less suitable for those hardcore activities, but the same comfort that people feel walking on the trail with them, people feel walking around town with them.
There's a certain sense of independence that happens with sandals that I enjoy.
Yeah. When you get used to wearing sandals in the summer, it's hard to put on closed shoes.
Now, in terms of price range, where do these come in terms of pricing for consumers?
Chacos are really at the upper end of the price range. Our least expensive sandal is a flip-flop, also featuring a polyurethane footbed and Vibram rubber outsole. Those are $50, so it's not a bargain basement kind of product. And our most expensive sports sandal is $105, and it has a super sticky 510 rubber outsole for very specialized applications. We also make a line of leather sandals featuring that same contour on the footbed, and they range in price from $100 to $140.
Now, if people want to find out more about Chaco, where should they go?
Well, the easiest place is obviously our website, and that's www.chacousa.com. Chacos are available at many retailers, including REI, which is perhaps the best-known national retailer, and a multitude of high-quality, independent, specialty retailers across the country.
Well, we've been talking with Mark Pagan, who's the president of Chaco. Do you go by Chaco, Chaco Company? Chaco, I want to, for my own purpose here, I want to say it right. How do you like to define the name of your company?
I just like Chaco.
Chaco it is. Mark Pagan of Chaco, thanks for being on the Wild Side News.
Thank
That was Mark Pagan, president of Chaco, a terrific player in the nature industry. I certainly encourage you to, when you're at your favorite outdoor retailer or whatever, keep your eyes open for Chaco. I know from personal experience that Chaco does a lot to help support all of us who are out here trying to make a difference for this planet and for the Earth. And it's our responsibility to help those folks survive, because they as well help us survive. You know, if you haven't had a chance to really take a look at the Wild Side News website at www.wildsidenews.com, boy, is it time to take a look. The website is going through some terrific changes. It's looking pretty sharp. There's a lot of fun new ways to get around. And, of course, the archives just keep on becoming richer and richer with great topics, part of the mainstream alternative to the regular media. This is a place where you can come on a regular basis to find out what's really happening on this planet and hear from the voices of people who are making a difference, the researchers and scientists and writers and artists and people like yourselves who are standing up for all that is important on this planet. So go to the Wild Side News website, www.wildsidenews.com, and while you're there, hey, send me an email. Go to the contact page, and I'll always love to hear from you. So when we return, we head on out to Amherst College and talk about gender benders here on the Wild Side News, the worldwide leader in Internet talk.